Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? Like, he sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Push the tempo, push the tempo, push the tempo up, push the tempo, push the tempo, push the tempo, push the tempo up, push the tempo, push the tempo, push the tempo, push the tempo up, push the tempo, and shake what your mama gave
you. Shake what your mama gave you. Hello and welcome to the worst idea of all time, secret season at numero four. We've recorded these episodes. Heading away. What?
Five.
What do you mean five?
This is the fifth episode.
Oh, I said season. It's the fourth season. Fourth secret season.
Oh, well,
we've hidden away in a cupboard.
What? That's right.
I mean, listen, mate. Ears are for listening. So you got two of those and one mouth and a microphone.
That's right. And I'm going to abuse the sweet powers that, you know, our Lord and Savior God has given me by using my ears to listen to the happenings of Sex and the City, using my eyes to watch what happens, and using my mouth to describe my experience to you, Tim Batt, who is essentially a proxy for our listener. How are you, Tim? Tell me about your life.
Guy Montgomery, I'm oh so good. Before I get on to my life, I'd just like to take this opportunity, because we really do it, to welcome in new listeners. If this is your first go around here, I'd like to explain what we do here at Worst Idea Enterprises, and that is Guy Montgomery and myself, Timothy Andrew Batt, watch and review a film ad nauseum. That's the ticket. That's the whole thing. That's the show. We've done a whole year of Grown Ups 2, then we did Sex and the City 2, then we did We Are Your Friends, now here we are with Sex and the City. How many episodes of this do you think we'll get through? It's hard to say. This one's a bit of a doozy.
I think we'll get through many, many, many episodes. So this week's episode is slightly unique. There's probably been a pretty substantial laydown period. Tim, you've been on a honeymoon.
This is the beautiful thing about recording them all in secret. There will be no exposure to the lag for you, the good listener. But yeah, I've been away for like 3 weeks. I've been out of the goddamn country, away from my home, away from solid internet connections, and most importantly, away from the gals.
Yeah, and while you were away, we did actually schedule an episode.
Yes.
I think while you were in Bali, Indonesia.
That's right.
And I was, I did my due diligence, I watched the film, I made my notes, and I showed up for game day. And you, due to some sort of programming error, did not.
I didn't even bring my boots.
No.
You were on the field you were warming up your hammies, just waiting for the rest of the players to take to the pitch. I was in the dressing room. What do you call it on a sports field?
You got it. It's called
a dressing
room.
I was in the showers.
I was
in the dressing room. Looked at my pack and my boots weren't even in there, mate. I had a Gatorade and that was it.
Yeah.
I hadn't brought the movie with me, is what I'm trying to get at.
That leaves us in quite the unique position now, whereby we're recording. I've watched the movie probably about a week ago now. You've watched the movie incredibly recently, and I figured, because it almost felt disingenuous, it's 7:30 a.m. here in New York City. I woke up at sort of 6:45, and have just been watching a grab bag of moments from Sex and the City. to be honest, quite a liberating experience because you don't need to suffer through anything that you're feeling is particularly painful. You can just dance around it. But also still obviously not ideal circumstance for an early morn. But I feel our respective takeaways and experiences with the movie on this episode will be quite unique. Also, I awoke to a few messages from you describing scenes as bonus content.
Absolutely. I had accidentally been watching a version that neither of us have seen before. And there isn't that much extra content. There's just two small scenes. I'm going by memory now, Guy, which I'm famed for my good memory. Like an elephant, my memory is.
Hold on. But before I've got them up in front of me so I can jog your memory as necessary. You, for 4 weeks, you purport to have watched a version of this movie that has, for no apparent reason, just edited out two sort of 45-second scenes.
Well, hold on. These scenes that I described, had you seen them?
Every week.
Wow. So we'd actually been watching different versions of the movie and didn't even know.
Is it possible that you've just missed these scenes?
Fuck, man, I actually thought that when I watched them, but then there was two, so I was like, no, this can't be it.
That's possible. So the first scene that you messaged, you wrote this. You said, dude, I've just watched a different cut of the movie. I mean, I can sense the excitement at your, discovery. There's a scene with Carrie trick-or-treating with Rose and Runkle and Charlotte. So what do you want to tell me about that scene?
Runkle is dressed as... what's his name from the Addams Family?
Uncle Fester.
Lester. Fester. That's right. He's Uncle Fester, and Charlotte hasn't really gone to much effort. She's just sort of a cat. She's kind of phoning it in with some
little cat
ears. Is she?
She's in a huge cow costume. She's got a giant udder on her front.
Might have only seen that bit once, It just flashed on
screen. But super recently, and you were so excited.
I thought she was a cat because she's got little pointy ears on. But yeah, no.
I want you to dig up that. I'm actually going to, while you describe the scene, I'm going to find that and I'm going to send you a screenshot because the idea that represents a cat to you is absolute fucking madness.
The other scene, which wasn't in the previous four watches that I had. And Guy, can I also say that I watched the movie 1.5 times today because I had a halftime penalty to catch up on because I was sort of asleep.
You're
during
a generous
the previous
man.
One, I never caught back up.
Can you also tell me, Tim, what Rose is dressed as, if you can remember?
No recollection of what Rose is dressed as.
She's Cinderella. Princess?
Yeah. Yeah,
more or less the same.
She does say. She says that to Carrie. She says she's going to go as Cinderella, which I also think was edited out. Anyway, the other bit that was new this week, this episode, this watch, was a call from Stanford that Carrie
Blanche.
Receives. He is the gay best friend to Carrie Bradshaw, and he gives her a ring on New Year's Eve, and they're both very sad. He's sitting in a packed bar, but he's kind of just by himself having a drink, being lonely. And Carrie has recently been broken up with from Monsieur Big. You've sent me the screenshot there.
I have. I just cannot conceive of a world where anyone would think that this is not a cow. Even if you only saw it in your periphery, it is just so...
Guy, give me a fucking break, would you, mate? What's happened is I've captured like a loose bit of imagery in my head. I've seen the ears. It's not like I saw that on screen and went, oh, look at that black and white cat. I clearly knew it was a cow at the time. I haven't stored that in there because there's important shit in my brain, mate. Didn't want to gunk it up with the specific outfit that Charlotte's in.
No, you're I don't know. It is unfathomable. I can't imagine anyone else in the world making this error. It is so...
It's a memory test, for Christ's sake. It's not important, Guy. You're dwelling on the wrong issues here.
It's not a memory test. It's a cat. I mean, I remember because you said she's gone to no effort. You didn't go to any effort in assessing her costume. Look at the udder. It's a big udder.
It is an udder. What do you want from me, Guy? I see it's a cow. I'm sure I saw it was a cow at the time. But my memory took a little snapshot and just saw some ears.
You're right. I'm making too much out of this. And so these two scenes that you observed for the first time, reportedly this week, did they add anything? Did they take anything away?
Absolutely not. And I can absolutely appreciate why the editors in my version that I've been watching the previous 4 weeks decided to get rid of them.
I think that you are those editors and your patchy memory is who you are giving big ups to right now.
I don't think so, because the version of the movie that I saw this week is, I think it's one that you put me onto, as it were, in the previous 4 weeks was one that I found by myself, as it was.
I like the idea of me putting you onto my Sex and the City guy. Yeah, my guy's got the best stuff, man. Pure.
Here in New York, there's a guy for everything.
Absolutely.
A guy for all seasons and all occasions.
So you've seen 1.5 times worth of Sex and the City, Tim. What do you think of it?
Pretty bad still. Well, actually, I don't know. It's not even that bad, really. I just don't enjoy it, you know? And there's a difference between those two things. I was talking to someone today, actually. I was just at a pub quiz because I'm taking over from my friend who hosts a couple of pub quizzes. He's away for 5 weeks, so I'm going to host his quizzes. So I went and did the quiz by myself and
struck
up a conversation with him. Do you know what? Not as shit as I would have thought. But he did write a whole round, which was Tim Bat or Batman, where every question was just a fact, which was either about myself or Batman, and all the teams had to pick. But I struck up a conversation with a woman, and
hey Tim,
we ended up joining
Tim.
Teams. Yeah,
nice.
No, she was just having a drink, but she joined in on the quiz with me, so I had a teammate.
Dude. Nice.
And where was I going with this?
Oh, I think we know where you were going with this.
I ended up telling her about the podcast, and she was like, "The Sex and the City's good."
Dude, nice.
It was a question. It was either Bruce Wayne or I had created a podcast that had been downloaded millions of times, and everyone had to guess if that was Batman or Tim Bat. At any rate, but she was like, "But Sex and the City's good." And I was like, the show's good. The movies are hot garbage. The first one's bad. The second one's even worse. She said, yeah. Long way around. And I think you're to blame for that, guy.
Hey, dude. That anecdote was nice.
Never hated you more.
Oh, that's not true. I'm sure that there's audio reference of you hating me. I remember an episode that I recorded from Edinburgh and you were in Auckland. I think you were heartbroken on your birthday and I arrived late. And in the back of my mind, while I don't remember the invective directed towards me, I'm fairly confident that was as much as you've hated me in either of our lives.
It's episode 27 of season 1, I think.
Yeah, you remember. Hey, if you don't mind me, I'm just going to open up a lovely can of La Croix.
La Croix. I like that you panned the camera down so professionally. And now I've got a lovely La Croix with your hairy chest as the backdrop. I'm loving every bit of it.
The flavour, pamplemousse.
What is that?
I think it's grapefruit, but it doesn't taste like what it says it tastes like. It tastes like, you know, I don't think the reference in America is Powerade, or no, Gatorade, but you know when you like, you have a Powerade and then you use the bottle as a water bottle and you fill it up with water and then it just forever tastes slightly like what was in it before?
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that someone put a whole fucking grapefruit in this can and then took it out and then they've just started putting water in it and that's what we're drinking.
But this is also like the 8th or 9th time it's been refilled. That's what La Croix is for me. There was something in this 8 or 9 recycles ago and it was pretty flavourful.
Do you not think if the gals were still palling around today, they'd have a lucrative deal with La Croix?
Not a doubt in my mind. It's exactly the brand. Mate, I've taken a few notes. Which end of the pool would you like me to dive into? Because we've got a deep end and we've got the shallows.
Why don't we start in the shallow end and we'll slowly lose our footing as we wade into the murky depths.
Smith Garrett takes his breakup after 5 years in getting his beloved through chemo like a champ. I know we've referenced this before, but the man takes it square on the chin.
Oh, I cannot believe you're telling me this. I tried to champion Smith Garrett to you, you know, and you're saying, nah, you're having none of it. You're thinking it's no good. and now you're going to come in here and suddenly share an observation and feeling that I've been trying to fucking force upon you.
I can't remember the exact contours of the convo, but I don't think I would have discredited your claim that he takes the relationship breakup well. It was the fact that he's a real jerk on Valentine's Day itself, which is the straw that breaks the camel's back between he and Samantha, as we all know.
I don't think that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. I think that relationship, Samantha is already emotionally checking out of that relationship, Valentine's Day or no. She's got a wandering eye. She knows as much. She can say, talk about it openly with her friends, but it's not until they give her the encouragement to break up with him that she realizes she needs to be on her own. I mean, the sushi...
She made an effort. It's that point in the relationship where you make that last gasp effort to try and win it all back. You know, but double or nothing.
Even if it went well, from the information we're given by Samantha, I do not think that relationship would go the distance.
You could be right. You could be right.
Certainly, no, I think it probably... Maybe. I think you're right, though. I think it accelerated the breakup.
5 years, though, guy. It's not nothing. And she's just like, you know what, babe? No more. And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. It's true. He's just such a chiller. He's like, yeah, it's all good. He's probably in the back of his mind like, I'm a millionaire movie star. And if he's got any emotional intelligence, he's probably clocked that she's checking out of the relationship. And has sort of probably done some emotional preparation for that conversation. Because you're right, it doesn't take him off guard at all. He's sort of like, ah, here it comes.
Yeah, here's the conversation I knew was coming. I wanted to mention that. I'd also just like to dig into with you, my friend, just how much money do we think Mr. Big has? I hadn't started thinking about this again until the scene where he buys the apartment and he just says, I'll take care of it. Like he's, you know, as Carrie rightly says, like he's picking up a check at a restaurant for some multi-million-dollar penthouse apartment. How much fucking money does this dude have?
Yeah, it's not an insignificant sum. It's got to be like he's got to be in the hundreds of millions if he's picking that penthouse up without batting an eyelid, isn't it?
It doesn't break a sweat.
That's got to beg the question. How has he accumulated such a vast amount of wealth and at what cost? Because, you know, you can guarantee, what do they say? A rising tide lifts all boats. I don't think of Big as a rising tide. I think of him as sort of quite an invasive boat that's come into harbour and just sort of taken what he wants.
I want to do this in a conversation tomorrow. Introduce a metaphor and then explain why it's the wrong one.
Yeah.
You know, they say the kettle shouldn't call the pot black, but here's why that doesn't apply to what we're discussing right now.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I love it. It's a hot new technique.
That's everyone's homework, folks. If you're listening to this conversation, get out there, find the most obscure but, you know, slightly known saying that exists and then tell people why it doesn't apply to the conversation you've just introduced it to. Here's the other thing about Big Guy. He leaves his writing of the vows to the very last moment. Like, it's the night before his wedding and he rings Carrie saying, I'm here trying to write the vows, which has added more fuel on the fire for me, more evidence that the man is illiterate.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know that writing your vows the night before is a bad decision. I think that that's probably when you've got the greatest amount of emotion swirling through you. The scary part, I guess, is that he's struggling against it, which would suggest that he's living in fear of the union and the scope of the event, but. He is a fucking he's an enigma, isn't he? This guy's a man of mystery. Hundreds of millions of dollars, cannot read nor write.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you imagine he's made he's amassed this fortune without those sort of basic skills?
I think we underestimate the power of a man who has certain skills in connecting people and making calls. I think if you can get on the phone and you can get a secretary to set it up so there's speed dials, so you don't even need to be able to read numbers. You just know that top left button is Carrie, but bottom left is Merrill Lynch and the VP who you deal with. And you just sort of have CNBC on to get a sense of how things are headed based on the talking heads.
But
and then just make some big calls.
It's no guarantee of making money. You know, you might occasionally get lucky, but that you're essentially spinning a roulette wheel.
Mate, of course. This is what I'm putting his wealth down to. Just you've nailed it.
What? Unrelenting good luck.
Yeah, and but you've got to also make your own opportunities for that luck to exist, you know? Like, not a lot of people would have the confidence in themselves to both be illiterate, but also be making tens of millions of dollars bets on the derivatives market. But most people aren't Mr. Big.
John Preston.
This is it. James John Preston. How do you think is my name also.
Yeah. How do you think he... I'm just imagining him wading into meetings, maybe not as the senior figure he is now, but as a junior... Or certainly as someone who's working his way up the ranks. And they go, all right, everyone, we're at the AGM here. Who's read the year-long report? And everyone goes, yeah, yeah. And they go, all right, John, maybe you could start us off with your findings from what you've read. What does he say?
This is where he excels, though. This is where the man comes to eat. If he had to read a paragraph from it, that would be no good, but he's so good. I think he would just direct them and say, gentlemen, we've all got the report. We've all read the report. It would be a waste of your time to reiterate what you already have. Here's what I think about the future direction of this company. This is how the man operates.
John, I'm really going to have to ask you to just tell us what you thought about the report that we've all just read.
Here's what I think about the report. I think it's, I think there's good stuff in there. And like all reports, we've got to take the nuggets. We're going to take those truths and we've got to run with them. We've got to recontextualize this. This was written a long time ago.
This was written last week.
That's in the markets, a century. You gentlemen understand what I'm saying.
What are the nuggets to which you're referring, John?
Synergy. You know? Synergy.
Yeah, yeah. No, there was a big chunk in there in synergy. Okay, sorry. I don't know why I was skeptical. Tell us your big ideas.
Here's, let me just get this book where I've scrolled them all down. But please,
Jesus
you know,
Christ.
If I,
that
I
is
just want to
barely a book. What you have there does not necessarily constitute a book, John.
I want to let you know that if you're seeing some things that look a little freaky to you, both the nature of the tome itself and also the drawings which are contained within, I need you to understand that, you know, when people found Da Vinci's notebook, they were very confused by the scrawlings that were written on there as well. And that motherfucker invented the helicopter. So here's one idea from my book that I've captured based on the feeling I got from the report. Guys, what do we know about rats? They fucking multiply like you wouldn't believe. I think we need to start farming them. And instead of looking at this as a huge threat, it's an opportunity. We've got to move it in that SWOT analysis, shift the columns. We're going to start farming rats and harvesting them for their fur and meat.
John, I'm going to stop you there because that is the most brilliant idea I have ever heard in my life.
Yes. Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Are we going to peddle the meat and furs as rat meat and furs, or are we going to...
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You couldn't dream of doing that. This is New York City. The people would be in conniptions over the thought of being served rat meat. So here's what we're going to tell them. It's duck.
And the fur? Also duck.
Also, duck, you've got it. You've got it in one.
Well, I see no
this is
reason
why
to be
we're at the top, baby.
This. That's true.
You gentlemen and I, we're on the same wavelength. We're operating at a very high frequency. Now let's go farm some rats.
I hope this meeting's given you the confidence to buy whatever you see fit to buy.
this is actually part of the origin story of Brady as well. And while we're talking about Brady, could I just get into the middle bit of the pool with my shining light? Him saying, I've got to go to the bathroom at dinner quite early on when Steve and Magda are there as well. Very funny stuff. Because if you look at his face, he's like, it changes in an instant, and it is the look of a young boy who has either just or is just about to shit his pants.
It's your classic, I need to go to the bathroom, when the real sentence is, I've just gone to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. I needed to have gone to the bathroom would be the grammatically accurate portrayal of that story. But yeah, it cracked me up, man. It's funny stuff.
Oh, that's nice. Do you want to know my shining light, seeing as we're here?
Yeah.
I want to give a huge shout out to art department and props. When Carrie sees the Vogue has hit the shelves and she buys it, and she says, I didn't want to buy it, but it was one less Vogue in New York. There's a cluster of leaves that blows into frame. From the right-hand side as she's marching down the sidewalk carrying her Vogue with a very determined, steely look in her eyes. And all I can see when I see that shot is just, you know, a poorly paid intern at the top of a ladder with a bucket of leaves. Maybe it was the last thing they shot on the whole film. Who's to say? But it does feel like the budget was getting pretty thin. And they were going, are you sure we don't need the leaves? And they were going, no, we don't worry, we're going to do the leaves. And they're like, well, this is our last take, so, you know, if you don't think it's going to look good, just don't do the leaves, because everyone's got a rat. We've got to get out of here, otherwise we're paying overtime. And Props goes, we're going to do the leaves. And, I mean, to me, it looks pretty obvious that there's just a handful of semi-wet leaves that they've put in a bucket and tipped out. And you can imagine Mattress Pikelet King going, fuck! Well, that's a wrap. And it's just,
I guess we've got leaves in the film now, everyone.
Yeah.
I hope you're happy, Rachel.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Good show.
While we're here, I've got two sort of almost ethical questions. Now, the first one is, Carrie's on the phone to Samantha.
Yeah.
Carrie is a successful writer. I mean, we know this. She owns a nice apartment. She lives a certain quality of life that is far beyond the reaches of most of us. You know, she's doing all right. She's on the phone to Samantha. I can't remember exactly what they're discussing, but Samantha's in LA, and she's walking around a bookshop on the phone to her. And at the conclusion of the phone call, Carrie has picked up one of her own books and swapped it out for someone else's book on like one of those display stands, so you know where they're like promoting maybe a new release or a new author. She takes her book.
That's awesome.
What do we think of that? Do we think that she's standing on people to maintain her reputation, or we think that that's just a good bit of fun?
I think it's a bit of honesty. It's a bit of integrity in the film for that character, because it doesn't matter how high up the chain you get. Who among us, if you had your own product, wouldn't bloody shunt that to the front of the shelves, you know? I reckon that's just wonderful, and exactly what a writer would do.
It's nice. I've wavered week to week, so it's good to have your take. I think ultimately you're right. I think when I get frustrated by it, I'm not frustrated by the practice so much as the character. And I'm inclined to agree. The other question I have for you is sort of based around
Guy.
Yeah.
Be real. You'd do that. You'd swap them out.
I'd check. She doesn't even look at what book she's swapping out, though.
You'd do it.
She doesn't even know whose pedestal she's bumping onto, you know?
Mate, you'd swap it out for the Bible.
I'd swap it out for the Bible, no worries. I don't know who gets the profits from the Bible, but I think that they're doing all right.
That's a good question.
It must be the publishing house.
Who's that?
Then why aren't we all just printing Bibles? Best-selling book on the market.
Why aren't we all in there? There seems to be a lot of versions. Maybe we just get our own one and go control F, find and replace like one word. And then it's our version. It's the Guy Montgomery version of the Bible, like the King James one.
Replace one word throughout the entire Bible. So replace God with Mr. Big.
Sure, or fucking like the to thee or whatever. You know, just make one change and then it's your version of it.
And right? Mr. Big said, let there be light.
And there was, and it was good. And then you got fucking rich.
Well, I mean, certainly we might have stumbled into a pretty interesting and lucrative side business here.
Is it time to shut down the podcast, Guy? Is this the future for us? Tim and Guy, the Bible guys. That name didn't. I didn't like it.
You're
we
blind
can do better than that.
No, no. The whole thing's gone down the fucking tubes on account of that.
Fuck. God damn it.
The other question I have is, when they're looking at Carrie's website, I think it's...
Who isn't?
It's her and I think St. Louise, who's saying it's a bloody disaster. And Carrie's got her fancy shoes. I guess it's her house. It's her chaise lounge. But she's got them right up there and she's scuffing up the material. What are your thoughts on shoes indoors, shoes on the couch, shoes on the chaise lounge?
In this order, shoes inside, fine. In all circumstances. The one where it's not is if you got hard wooden floors, some hard shoes on, and someone's trying to sleep.
What apart about that, this is in your home, right?
Mm.
You abide the rules set by other people at their homes.
I will follow the protocol. If I see some doors by the front door, you better believe I'm taking my laces off as soon as I see that.
Even if you're wearing high tops or those hiking boots you like to wear, they're a real pain to get on and off. You know, once you put those on for the day, you'd like to think that's it.
Yeah, that's true. But I'd rather spend the 45 seconds relacing than perform a social faux pas. So you're right. In my casa, you know, shoes are real good. The chaise lounge, though, I'm with you, mate. I'm with what I think is going to be your take on this. You can't chuck those on the couch.
Even if it's your own chaise lounge, it just shows that you've lost touch with civilized society, or you know, you're devaluing something that I assume cost quite a bit of tin.
Having a chaise lounge in your establishment, you're on the cusp already. You're on the crest of the wave, and you are this close to losing your grip. And if you get shoes on, you're gone. Like, you are the 1% at that point, and when the revolution comes, the defining line is going to be between those who have a chaise lounge and those who put their own shoes on their own chaise lounge.
Chaise lounge. Fun to say.
That's Bernie's revolution, mate. That's the defining red line in the sand.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, you let me know when you're ready to get into the deep end of the pool, Guy.
I don't want you to thrust this on me. I want to be trying. You know, is there any scarier feeling, less so in a pool, more so in open water, you're swimming around, you think that you're still within your comfort zone, or that you can sort of, you know, treat the water as your own, and you go to put your feet down so that you're planted and you're firm and you're solid, and you reach down and what's that? You're not even your toes are touching the bottom, and then you sort of you scurry and you flurry and you start kicking around. You're like, well, if that's not the bottom, where's the bottom? And what in God's green earth's underneath me? Well, it's not going to be anything from God's green earth. It's going to be a bloody fish, God's blue earth. But that's what I want.
That's
to
not
experience.
God's domain at that point either. And you're right to be fearful, because now we're in Neptune's house. You know, we're not in God's house anymore.
Is Neptune ubiquitous across all religious texts? So
it's my understanding of the
fellow. I love that. Is he a vengeful god? They all are, I guess.
Neptune strikes me as a more ambivalent character. God, slightly petty, from what I've read in someone's version of the Bible, but, you know, people are just changing them and printing their own to make money these days, so I don't know how trustworthy the text is. But Neptune just seems like he'll gladly wipe you out if you're in his way or anything, but he also won't hold a grudge.
Yeah.
You know? He's not that kind of guy.
I feel like, I don't know, I mean, I think that's a generous estimation. To me, the guy feels like he'd definitely hold a grudge.
Neptune would.
Roman gods are freaky gods, man.
Yeah.
They love, like, creating half gods, half people, and having sex with them, and then if they look at them wrong over tea, they're like, ah, oh, well, I'm going to fucking, you know, you're going to go and do a bunch of shitty jobs. You're going to do errands for the rest of your life. And it's not like, oh, pick up and drop off my dry cleaning. It's like, oh, the errand I'm going to give you is to... Is it someone who delegates that boulder to push up a hill every day? Like, it's barely an errand.
Yeah.
Who does that?
It's a terrible errand.
Sisyphus? I don't know.
Who is that?
Who pushes the boulder? I'm going to look it up. You keep talking to me. As you slowly walk me into the deep end of the pool.
I was just going to say that there is a lot of weird sex stuff with those gods. And it's not just the
Sisyphus.
Romans, it's the Greeks.
Sisyphus? Sisyphus.
He did something to anger them that got him that boulder duty, though, right? Like, he did something wrong.
Yeah. And then he got
his insides picked out by a bird, from memory.
It was, so he was a king, and he truly believed himself to be smarter or more clever than Zeus himself. And so Zeus said, oh yeah, well, if you're so smart, how about a bit of this? How about you push that fucking rock up a hill for the rest of your life? And he's like, this isn't fair.
It's the dumbest activity. It's not like an IQ test or a game of chess.
I saw a funny cartoon in a magazine recently. Is it Atlas whose job it is to hold up the entire world? And it's him and his partner, like, they're, I think, walking home, or maybe they've been to the grocery store, and he's holding the entire globe on his back. And then he's also got, like, just a bag of groceries pinched under it. And his partner's like, oh, don't be a fucking hero. Share the load.
That's nice. And a solid message for us all. Guy, do you remember the bit of the movie where we find out that Carrie and Mr. Big's wedding has made it to page 6 of the paper?
Uh-huh.
Don't think we even named that paper. Well, I took a little screenshot of this. I'm just going to do a slight readjustment so I can actually read this from the screen, because the text ain't that big. So we've got... on the extreme left-hand side, bestseller Bliss, the ultimate single girl, Carrie Bradshaw, will be married in Manolis. What does that mean? To New York financier John James Preston come fall, proving to single girls everywhere that there can be a happy ending after 40. That's fine. Describing what's happening in the movie, all good. I'm always interested to see what they put in to fill out the rest of the paper. You know, it's always an interesting wrinkle when you've got to chuck a lot of text up on screen. What do they mock up? They've included the article just to the right in full scope, full view of the camera, a JFK conspiracy putting forward that Lyndon Baines Johnson is right at the center of responsibility of a small cabal of people for the demise of JFK, one of the greatest American presidents ever. And it's all about a man called E. Howard. It says, and if I muddle this a bit, it's quite hard to read. E. Howard, the shadowy former CIA man who organized the Watergate break-in and was once eyed in the assassination of President Kennedy, bizarrely says that Lyndon Johnson could be seen as a prime suspect in the rub-out. Interesting word, rub-out. Only the most far-out conspiracy theorists believe in scenarios like Hunt's. But in a new memoir, American Spy, My Secret History in the CIA, Watergate and Beyond, out in April, Hunt, aged 88, writes, quote, having Kennedy liquidated, thus elevating himself to the presidency without having to work for it himself, could have been a very tempting and logical move on Johnson's part. The article goes on, Guy, but I won't bore you with the details. But it is amazing to me that that is the article they decided to include in this mocked-up newspaper they had to make.
So I've done a quick Google, and I've stumbled into a Rolling Stone article entitled The Last Confession of E. Howard Hunt, published on April 5th, 2007.
Yes, boy, I was reading about this earlier today. Take me there.
Well, I mean, by all accounts, it feels like they were going for... Obviously, the JFK assassination isn't necessarily current affairs, but digging back into it, you know, maybe they were like, what would be on it? What is in a paper, you know, this week? And then, is this, I don't know, is this a Hansel and Gretel trail? Is Mattress Pikelet King, you know, beyond making these...
I think there's a lot of people in Hollywood, they're all connected and, you know... They know things. Hollywood people, do they know things? What do they know? Let's find out. I think that Mattress Pikelet King knows a lot more than he's been letting on through his career with Sex and the City about the demise of the great President Kennedy.
You think Sex and the City are these quite large flares or sort of SOS type messages that he has constructed? If only there was some sort of analogy from Greek mythology which could describe the practice of building a giant construct in which you mask your true intentions. But alas, I suppose that will have to wait for another lifetime.
Guy, think of a horse, and now think of a tree.
Tim, this is no time for you to distract me from my mission.
No, you're right, you're right. But it is interesting. So this guy is real. This is a real dude. He did die, and a couple of his sons claim that on his deathbed, he actually confessed to knowing about the plot quite intimately. But then two other of his kids and his widow, who I think wasn't their mother, has come out and said that they were just some money-grabbing hucksters, you know, trying to cash in on their dad's infamy.
That's not a bad play from the kids.
It's not bad, eh? So this guy, E. Howard, whatever his name is, he, you know, had his suspicions, but the sons took it a lot further just to try and sell some books
Dad.
Pockets.
Oh, absolutely. And the moon landing's false. And while we're all here, jet fuel can't melt steel beams. Look at Building 7.
Quite enough of that. It's good that it's in there. It's good that it's in there.
It is nice. If we are reading screenshots from the film, this is one I picked up a little while ago. So when, you know, they do the beautiful overview, they say, here are our characters for the story we're about to tell, for, you know, those of us who might not have watched the series but are at the cinema. And she describes Charlotte York. And as she describes Charlotte York, there's a, you know, because she uses her friends as fuel for her career, we get a brief glimpse at one of the chapters from one of Carrie's books, maybe Manhattan, maybe something else. And this is the finished article. This is the published book, you know, presented as such. And I'll read for this from you what I can. So that it says something at the top. You know, I can't make it out. Then it says Trey McDougal was Charlotte York's dream man, handsome, da la la. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. It was a perfect sunny day in June. So this is describing their wedding. I had sex with you're late. I've been done to talk to you. They start. It goes on and on. It's like a paragraph. And then the last sentence of the paragraph is, "Hey, what are we talking about?" I said. Miranda nodded. Have you got a mint? I have major coffee breath. And then beneath that, Carrie, in a classic play. Actually, I don't know if this is a classic play. Like, this is the sort of thing you'd do if you were in a first year university. Like, if you had to submit a first year paper for philosophy, and you're like, "Fuck, I haven't done the work," and so you just copy and paste the exact same paragraph as the first one 10 times, and you email it in as an attachment, and your tutor goes, "Oh, weird thing happened. When you turned in your essay, it was just the same paragraph over and over." And you go, oh, that weird. Must have been an internet glitch. Do you remember that sweet period in life when you could just be like, oh, yeah, the internet must have fucked it up?
It's only about 3 years that people were remotely getting away with it, but it was a golden time to be at university, I would think.
Well, this is roughly the same timeline whereby Carrie was publishing books.
So is it just, it is a copy and pasted paragraph is what you're treated to on screen?
Over and over in perpetuity.
Just take the fucking 25 minutes to come up with something. You're a screenwriter.
Or,
you know?
If you don't have the time, increase the font size. No one's going to...
Yep, that too.
No one's going to pause it and be like, what? Who prints a book in 24 point? I mean, we probably will.
But they will. They will pause it and have you up on the repetition.
Yeah. So I tell you what, I mean, while what we're doing is probably not of interest to, anyone else?
Anyone?
It certainly feels like we're making some pretty powerful inroads into this deep end of the pool.
There's one last thing. Let's get out of the deep end. Let's chill out at the shallow end with a G&T in hand. Which is, we haven't mentioned yet the fact that Smith Garrett, who is later revealed to be a mystery bidder at an auction that the gals are at where Samantha's got her heart set on this beautiful ring. And she's bidding against someone for it. She really wants it. And it turns out to be Smith has bought it for her. Fuck, man, how much money did they waste going up against each other for her to ultimately get it anyway? Like $40,000. The bidding started at 10 grand. There isn't a iota of interest from anyone else in the auction house except for that one person bidding on Smith's behalf and Samantha. How fucking rorted did they get?
I agree, but for, you know, the good fortune of their financial circumstance appears to be not that they've burned an extra, you know, 30k on this, frankly, you know, pretty garish ring, but it's that what it represents to Samantha is a lack of independence. I mean, how sound are they doing? What does their joint bank account look like? If it's not like, oh my God, we just spent $30,000, but it's like, oh my God, just let me buy my ring. Also, that what really shat me about...
They're not communicating well.
What shat me about that is Has Charlotte never been to an auction before? Her obsession with someone being on the phone is like, well, that's not fair.
Like, dude, well, I've never been to an auction before, but I wouldn't be shocked to see that because I've read a fucking book or seen a TV show in my damn life.
Her general,
it's crazy shouted upbringing.
Her obsession with like order and rules just it drives me up the wall. I don't know that
but
Charlotte.
That's who she is,
I mean,
guy.
I don't know. I guess I don't know how she's written in the show, but her as she's represented in the movies, she is one of the last people I'd like to be in a corner with at like a barbecue or a dinner party. It's like, you know, sometimes you get caught talking to someone and in the back of your mind you're like, oh, fuck. The sort of person who, as soon as you start looking around at the other conversations, you're like, oh, how has everyone else got so much to talk about? I mean, I am really out here right now.
I think you're being very harsh on Charlotte. I'd love to have a little convo with her at a BBQ. I think it'd be delightful.
What common ground do you share?
Possibly none, and in there lies the fantastic and rich conversation before us, exchanging cultural identities, filling in each other's gaps, you know, finding out what it is like to live on the other side of that beautiful white picket fence.
Do you know, I say this with nothing but love and respect for you, Tim, I don't think Charlotte would give you the time of day. I genuinely don't think, like, I think...
That didn't feel loving or respectful.
You'd ask her a question, she'd answer. She'd either sense that you're not worth asking a question back to or ask you a question.
Oh, guy.
You would say, oh, yeah, I'm from New Zealand. I live in Auckland with my beautiful wife. And she'd say, oh, okay, that's lovely. I'm just going to... are you okay for a drink? I'm just going to go and top up my bubbles. And you'd be like...
I am a sparkling conversationalist. You know this about me.
I don't doubt that.
I would
that.
Definitely be able to... I would be able to hold court with Charlotte, whatever your last name is.
There's no one I'm happier to be sidled up next to at any social event. But I'm telling you, Charlotte York would not give you the time of day. And the fact that you... It's kind of embarrassing, the fact that you you desire her conversation so badly.
I would... Well, I do now because you've told me that I would be unable to obtain it. You know? Really shot the value up. But I guess we'll never know because she's a fake character that I'm going to be watching... on a small or large screen for the next, fuck, who knows, 6 months of my life?
Yeah. Well, it's late where you are, and it's early where I am.
I can't tell you how late it is, except to say that it's 12:28 a.m.
And it's 8:30 a.m. here. What can I look forward to today, Tim?
Guy Montgomery, the 4th of September has started off uneventful and dark, because it's the middle of the night.
I want a review of the 3rd of September. It's Labor Day here in America.
Ah, well, here's your opportunity to put on all those white clothes you're so crazy about wearing, because you must put them back in the cupboard after today. For how long? I don't know.
All right.
But here's my review of the 3rd. It's groovy.
Cool. A lot to look forward to. Well, have a great and restful sleep. Don't take that stuff about Charlotte too hard.
I don't, mate. I know you say it with love and respect, even though it sounds like the opposite.
Hey, can I just say, Tim, with nothing but love and respect?
Yeah.
Fuck you, my dude.
Can I just say that there is... like, are you familiar with the concept of a Trojan horse? Because that comment wasn't anything like a Trojan horse. I'm just a fucking idiot who introduces metaphors that don't make any sense and then backpedals immediately. I've been Tim Back. Good night, everyone.
I've got no idea what a Trojan horse is.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? Like, he sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.